going forward. So I like the team, and I think the league win, I love it also. So I think it's going to be really good.
I do also like that the focus is not just on the non-conference, because to me it's like, all right, can we put a whole season together? What's that look like?
Like he said, that's maturity.
Yeah.
And that's growth. And that's winning the regular season. I didn't realize they had never won the regular season
either. They've won the conference champ, whatever. They won the conference tournament. And then I think the year they won the conference tournament, they finished second to Houston.
Oh.
But I think that's the best finish.
Okay, but they never won the regular
season. But, like, to me, like, one of the more encouraging things is if the story with Tyrese is true, like, I think the key difference between that team, and I know that that team got beat by FAU, and the way the season ended really clouded how consistently good that team was. But the best part about that team was, like, Kendrick and DeAndre led the way. And you know as well as anyone, you can preach all the right things, you can run the right drills. But man, if the team doesn't have leadership internally, there's only so much they can do. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. My first, when you have players that are committed to the highest level, my first ever time coaching, and I was really, really young, 21, 22, 23, and coaching LaRon Black and them.
Yeah.
At, he was like top 15, and coach, he pivoted my career because he was such a leader. Yeah. I would leave out the gym. I never saw nothing like this. Come back in. Guys, have y'all ran y'all 5 laps? Everybody else would say, yes. He, no, we haven't. We got 3 more. And he would take off, and the rest of the and so when you got guys, and I'm like, and so that's what I'm kind of used to. So when I started.
No, you think it's like, oh, this is easy. Just have your best player be your best leader. Yeah, that's awesome.
So when I started having teams after that, and some people wasn't like that, I'm like, oh, this was my first experience.
It's easy, man. Roll the ball out. Let them play.
So, no, if he's getting on them like that, because sometimes, you know, they look at us as, oh, the coaches just didn't know how to coop. But when they're peer, sometimes you can have, like, peer pressure in a good way. And when their peers are saying they want to be harder and do better, that rubs off to the right in the right direction.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get into the list. We've gotten an update on the House settlement. So this is what the future of college athletics is like. I want to run some things by Herd, what he thinks are good ideas, bad ideas. It's a little bit in between. Also get back into some football. We'll do all that when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Each and every day here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, we do a little thing called the list. Let's fire it up. The House settlement. Yeah, for those that are curious, what the heck is the House settlement? This is the big NCAA settling the back pay of NIL, but really what it's become, Herd, is essentially it's a central court decision that potentially impacts what the future landscape looks like. So originally they had a deal in place. The judge said no. Take it back. This is a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago. Time stands still. But in the last couple of months, they had a deal. The judge said, no, take it back, restart. So let me break down what this agreement says. There's still a lot of hurdles, but this is actually news in the sense that it was essentially negotiated between two parties and a judge signed off on it. So that's more than what we've had recently. Okay. $2.8 billion in back pay. This was what the original lawsuit was all about, was players that were not from the NIL era getting money that would have been owed to them in this era and getting it signed off on. So the $2.8 billion is spread out over 10 years. It comes from the NCAA and social distribution. Ross Dellinger says that is NCAA tournament money. So whenever you see that, that's code for NCAA tournament money. The distribution is determined using a formula based on a player's value. $2.3 billion goes to the Power Four in football and men's basketball player. It's an average of $120,000 a player spread out over 10 years. Payments could begin as soon as May. Okay, the next part of it was revenue sharing. So this is how schools are going to share TV money and all the money that the conference generates. So it's $20 plus billion in revenue sharing over 10 years. schools must stay under an annual cap determined through an average of Power 4 revenue. The first-year cap is likely between $21 and $23 million per school, with escalators as high as $33 million by the year 2035. Schools are not required to share revenue. The revenue sharing would start on July 1. Schools can distribute revenue at their own discretion. Most plan to use a back pay formula for distributions that would be 25 to 85% football, 10 to 15% men's basketball, 10 to 15% other sports. Title IX is not exempt, resulting in certain lawsuits. Revenue mostly shared by buying players, by buying player NIL rights. So the idea would be, if I am going to play, name one of your best guys. If he goes and signs with Arkansas, he is, when he signs, he's also handing over his NIL rights to the school, and then there would be compensation based on that, but essentially he's selling his rights. To me, you see this a lot of like in music industry or entertainment industry where you're selling the rights to your product, but they're going to sell it for you. You're still going to make some kind of money. $2.5 million of the pay counts towards the cap, which is why many schools also plan to curtail the Alston pay. That's another court case. $2.5 million of new scholarship money that a school adds counts towards the cap. Look for schools to add more scholarships to women's sports to balance Title IX. Then we get to the roster structuring aspect of this. Schools are to provide scholarship to full rosters under new roster limits. Roster limits change dramatically. In football, you'll go from 105 down to 85. In men's basketball, from 15 to 13. Baseball will be 37, but only 11.7 would be on full scholarship. Walk-ons will still exist. That was something that was questioned. The enforcement side of this, there will be a cap management system. Plaintiffs, Power 4, NCAA to police cap requiring regular school submissions. The clearinghouse will still exist. It's a non-NCAA third party to approve certain non-school NIL boosters to athletes. Arbitration would also be a part of this, a neutral arbiter to hear appeals on enforcement matters. There's opting in and opting out. Schools have a choice to opt out of the settlement terms, thus prohibiting them from revenue sharing. Many FCS and basketball playing programs plan to opt out of the settlement. There's an ongoing debate on future competition between Power 4 schools and those that have or those that opt out. And then finally, the settlement will require NCAA rule changes. The D1 Council expects to eliminate the national letter of intent, apply the football red shirt rule to all sports. That means you can play up to 30% of a season and still be granted an additional year, and they will permit athletes to receive prize money and pay before enrollment. All right, so there's a lot there. It seems to me, though, this will be the real issue. If you're going to have schools that have to opt in, and we're talking roughly, I mean, let's say it's like $20 million a year. I mean, to me, like, that's the beginning of the breakaway from the power schools, the breakaway that always gets talked about because, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't, Memphis has said they plan on being a part of this, but it's like, we know $20 million just kept them from, a $20 million exit fee kept them from going to the Pac-12, and a bad deal. I don't want to simplify it that much. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's other factors, but that was, let's be clear, that was the primary hurdle. Like, I do wonder, like, how many schools are actually going to be able to participate in this?
Yeah, like you say, that's strong to do. We know the two power leagues might be fine. No, it's a Power 4, but
it's a Power 2. Let's be real.
Yeah. And even those two, not to jump off Jeff, I have even heard certain stuff where they probably got more power than NCAA. They're talking about they might start their own national.
Oh, I think it's fair to say they have more. In a market society, they would have more power and leverage than the NCAA would.
Yeah, like they could do that on that something. So from that standpoint, who can really do it, like you said, or who can really put that and have that much leverage, have that much say. So, like you said, it was a really lot with this piece that they have added and taken away with the new structure. So I would love to see Memphis and teams, you know, I always like to see people feel like they're involved and growth is right for the game and the students and their business. But then it comes down with who can do it.
I think the other question that I have is, okay, it seems like to me you're still going to have some version of this. And you tell me if this lines up with what you've been hearing. Okay, yes, the schools are going to share the revenue with players, but NIL is still going to be a separate part of this. So to me, this creates a system where if we are in this world now where NIL is kind of leveling the field, I think that system gets it back to where it once was. It's like, okay, everyone may or whatever have the same salary cap, but this would be the same as saying, like, you know, everyone in the NFL has the same salary cap, but you can pay Patrick Mahomes an additional $50 million a year based on where he goes. And like that to me would just entice the schools that are the have schools. Like that only strengthens them in a way that maybe they're not as strong right now. Like to me, like that would get it back to the biggest brands are going to continue to be the biggest brands.
Yeah. We back to losing parity at that point. What we're trying to do. So, and, phrase, I guess the rich get richer and all that. When you get back to now, you're doing a share mix with NIL. Oh my God, I think that even create more drama. I'm glad the kids get paid, and I think even people think like the money has nothing to do with the transfer. It didn't at first, but when NIL got added with it, like that's the biggest reason people are. You know what? I didn't even know the 30% because in basketball is a little different.
Yeah.
Transfer rule, and I'm seeing this. I don't ever remember seeing so many people. When I say my bad, 30% red shirt rule.
Yep.
I don't remember seeing this many people red shirting in the middle of the year before money got involved in the transfer. I never used to see this. Now it's like a few a week I'm reading about that. Oh, yeah. I'm getting my red shirt.
Yeah. Is it something that never happened? No. It was always way more quiet.
Oh.
But it is certainly not, it never happened at the frequency that you're talking about now. Because there's also kind of a marketing element where now guys are announcing that they're redshirting, letting everyone know, I'm open for business. So there was, it happened, but not at this frequency. But now it also becomes more public because now guys want their name out there saying like, hey, I'm open for business and, you know, get your offers in.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And that makes sense what you're saying. Even also probably trying to, on the flip side, leverage even with the school they're currently at.
Oh, 100%.
Because I'm sure before they put it out there, or even they put it out there saying stuff like, look, man, if I don't get this, sound like that's what happened with UNLV quarterback. If I don't get this by Thursday, then I'm no longer with this team and I'm using my red shirt.
100%.
So,
and basically what happened with UNLV was UNLV, like that was the classic everybody was lying story.
Mm.
And you like had to like, you had to piece together the truth. But it seems to me, broadly speaking, what happened was UNLV was off to a hot start. Guy was playing pretty well-ish. Comes in and says, hey, you know, can we find some more money? And UNLV had to make the decision of, is this really worth it? Because the guy, you know, by all accounts, they basically decided the quarterback competition was kind of a draw, and they went with him. Like, they made the decision to go with him. But then when guy comes in and says, I want more money, you're like, you know what? Best of luck to you. Like, we don't wish ill on you, like, but best of luck, but we're gonna keep the money here. We're gonna spend it elsewhere.
Yeah, and I didn't watch them last week, but like after that happened, the next week that they scored like 45.
Oh, they beat the absolute hell out of Fresno State. Haj Malik Willis is the guy that's come in and replaced him. I can see where maybe in a quarterback competition, like you can't really hit the guy in practice, and you can't risk getting your quarterbacks hurt. I can see where the other guy would win the job, but when you watch Haj Malik Willis, like their offense is so much more exciting with him. And so you have this situation where we went with one guy, but we have another option that we like, so we'll just let the other guy walk. And so they got beat in overtime this week, but it certainly wasn't because Haj Malik Willis didn't play well. He played awesome.
Yeah,
because they had the type of offense. Like, Syracuse won a game in which I don't really remember them getting a stop. Like, they just kind of figured out, they navigated the clock well enough to get the game to overtime, but they didn't really stop him. But I mean, to me, I don't know. Like, this kind of becomes the question. It's like, is there going to be a universe where they can separate football, make it football, and then still have everyone play basketball?
So with what you're saying with that, because like I said, it was a lot of reading with that proposal.
Yes.
You're saying that the other sports will be part of the NCAA and the football won't?
Kind of, sort of. I don't think they've quite hammered out that detail, but that goes back to the original point that you made, though. I think there's a lot of waiting. The SEC and the Big Ten are going to meet this week, and they're supposed to meet about scheduling. Wink, wink. You know what we mean. What they're going to meet about is playoff, figuring out, like, where do we stand here? Like, what are, like, that meeting to me is more significant in terms of the landscape of everything. What does it look like? I don't know. I keep going back to the point that you made. It's not necessarily, if you use 2020 as an important year in looking at college athletics, we created a system where the transfer waiver went away. So you had unlimited transfers. You have NIL coming into the NIL coming above board. And then you have eligibility, like people granted extra additional eligibility. And so they were asked to solve all three problems at the same time. And this is an organization or a group of people that are not good at solving even one of those problems. But then you put all three at the same time. That's why you have the situation that we do now. Because, I mean, coaches are even talking about this. To your point about the whole redshirting thing, like, coaches are having to be aware of, hey, this guy's maybe someone that we kind of could use, but he's fallen a little behind in the depth chart. Like, what do we do? Do we get him some catches this week? Are we force feeding him? Are we letting him walk? Like, that's a huge part of this.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing about coaches, Jeffrey. All week in the meeting films and stuff, all that sounds good. But when the real game start, it's one of them things that we're going to deal with.
You know who you trust.
How we deal with. Yeah. We're going to go with whatever I'm winning this game right here. But no, Jeff, it was a real statement made. I don't know if it was this year or last year that the SEC and the Big Ten had met or was meeting. And if they didn't get some demands, but I think the NCAA agreed to whatever that they were going to do their own league.
Yes, like, and that's always the looming threat is if they go and break off and form their own thing. Well, I mean, that was always the original idea was power four. It's like, as long as you got 64 teams, we could still have a basketball tournament.
And today, defense, like, they actually, like, at this point, how much do they really need the NCAA, the SEC and the Big Ten?
I think they like having the NCAA as a shield to kind of do what they want, but it's not like they really need them for anything.
Because I mean, they could do the TV deals on their own. That's what it's basically 100%. About. They got the product.
Yes. Yes. And they've also got the brands that you want to watch. Like, that's kind of the other larger part. All right, let's talk some Grizzlies. Memphis Grizzlies. All right, so we got preseason basketball tonight. If you have League Pass, you can watch it. I don't believe we're going to have it locally. I know the home games are going to be shown on the artist formerly, maybe still possibly known as Bally Sports. Not quite sure how we're going to brand that. Home games will be shown, and I believe also the Pacers game will be shown because Diamond owns that. But we get the first preseason look, and to me, there's kind of a couple of questions I have, and I wanted to pick your brain on it. Number one, is the conversation around perhaps the Grizzlies running a new offense, is that a real thing, or is that, we've been at preseason camp, we need something to write about, something to talk about. It's not like a complete zero, but it's a much smaller deal. And then I think the other big thing is, like, who actually plays? Like, is there going to be tips, you know, are we going to get like a look at a tip off of what rotations might look like? Are we going to see certain guys play, guys not play? Like, to me, like, those are kind of the big questions that I have.
Well, that's the great thing about media, Jeff, and as I have been more and more in it over the years, that I appreciate y'all about, because y'all do a great job, or we do, creating narratives.
Discussion.
To keep stuff going. No, because seriously, yeah, like you say, I'm not saying the offense is a zero. It's actually somewhere in the middle. But then tomorrow, I know when I wake up, it's going to be a lot of people writing on a preseason game that, you know, and I don't want to lower people's standards here on anything, but like, man, you starters might only play a two, three, four.
Somebody will play. Like, who knows?
Not play, and then we're going to do a great job. So for me, I, not to sound like this, I don't think it's a huge thing about the preseason game tonight, and even the offense. Tonight, I don't think we would learn, you know, even if they had, I don't think we'll learn much about it tonight. But I think as time goes on, creating a new offense with some players, I think that will be a big deal. Because like we was talking about off the air, how much Ja Morant has the ball in his hands and what level of decision making and creativity he would have in the offense is a big deal.
Yeah, I'm with you, because there's also this possibility. They may come out and run some type of offense that looks new to us. They could also be, like, this happens all the time in preseason where, hey, like, I think about one year we had spring football, my sophomore year, we were horrible in short yardage. And so we spent our whole spring football running nothing but a short yardage package. Like, that didn't matter if it was first and 10. We were, like, that's how much, like, we were focused on just being better in short yardage. And we did that the entire spring. Well, that was something we maybe ran, you know, five times a game the next year, but that's all we did in spring ball, which is, it could be, hey, this is something that they're just working on. They're going to run it for a whole game and whatnot just to kind of get looks at it, see what they like, what they don't like. I'm just with you. Like, I don't even think we're really going to know whether or not there's a quote unquote new offense until we get, what, 10, 15 games into the year?
Yeah, exactly. And then, we discussed, a new offense is good. Coaching is extremely important, but there's only a 24-second shot clock in the NBA. And so, generally speaking, by the time you cross half court, you are probably at 18 to 16. And a lot of times, once you make a couple passes, you're under 12. And so, it's only so much you can do. Now, I will say this. I remember being at a Timberwolves game last year, you know, me and Ant-Man cool and certain things. And, of course, when they came here two times, the roster was just depleted. It wasn't the right game that we about to see this year on MLK. I did see them do some things, and I don't do this much, and I was like, oh, the Timberwolves actually is running some good stuff. So, with them being pros and so fast and athletic, they can get a lot done in that time, but it got to still be, to a certain extent, quick hitters and stuff like that when you got a 24-second shot clock.
Yeah, because I've always just had this wonder. One of the consistent complaints of why has this team fallen short, it has been half-court offense. And so you're doing your team a disservice if you're not trying to find additional answers to maybe improve your half-court offense. But how much of half-court offense in the playoffs is just shot making?
I was just about to say that. I hear that used a lot, even around high school and middle school, about half court offense come down to a few things. But to me, the main three, and you said one of, having a guy that can go get a bucket.
Yeah.
Having a guy that you can throw it to in a post that can get a bucket. Or having guys that can shoot on high levels. And when I say shoot threes on high levels, so the first thing for audience that don't know the difference between shooting and a bucket means like, somebody like a Carmelo Anthony or Durant or Lucas, people like that, a Kyrie that can
cheat code Kyrie, like when Dame gets hot. Guys that are just making tough shots and there's nothing you can do. Like Steph coming down, like shooting from the logo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you got, when I say shooting, when you create and pitch, if you got some high-level three-point shooters, it look good. But in reality, if you don't have guys that can just superstar and get buckets when they want to, or when everybody on Ja and everybody other guys on the team can't create their own bucket, of course that's going to create a stagnant on half court because, you know, that's what fast. First of all, for people, the game, fast break is the name of the game. It has nothing to do with people thinking, oh, you're not thinking, oh, you. Anything in life where you have the advantage, if you have a 3-on-2, 2-on-1, 100-on-99, that's just an advantage to your thing. So that's what you want to try to do if you can.
Name a sport where the offense is not in a better position if the defense isn't set.
Exactly.
Like football. Yes. Like even like if you could, baseball kind of gets backwards because it's the only sport where you have the ball and you're on defense.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, you know, if you could get up there and have an AB before the defense would be set, that would be an advantage to you. Like, you know what I mean? Like every sport, like soccer, if you have guys are out of position, you could take advantage of that. I was like, yes, that's, I don't understand. I'm with you. Like, duh.
That's the name of the game. Think about football. Like you said, you're a big football guy, Jeffrey. The offensive coordinator and all the greatest offensive coordinators learn how to create an advantage, whether it's from a sweep or a run or a pass, where if we throw it on this screen, we're going to have four people to their three blockers. I mean, that's pretty much what it is.
Doesn't matter if it's the wing tee or if it's the shotgun empty backfield. If you've got two defenders and I've got three people out there, I'm going to throw the ball there.
That's what we want to do.
Yes.
And not to bring up your point too, Jeffrey, you just came up with something exciting because you're a big baseball guy.
Yes.
Okay. If baseball created a rule, I know they keep trying to get faster, where everybody at the bullpen – and somehow everybody just got to run up there at one time. Whoever get up there first get the hit. Just something crazy. I can't even think because the pitcher still, I guess, got control. That's the only reason this might not work. It would actually probably be, now you, some people might hate it because it's not traditional. You would actually get even more viewers because people like the fast, exciting.
Well, I mean, they kind of have started this where now, so they got rid of the shift.
I remember that.
So you have to play, like everyone has to be relatively reasonable like in a certain position. And then they've added a pitch clock. So you
you can't be out.
I think it's like 18 seconds if there's nobody on. So whatnot. So like you can't make the in batter adjustments that used to be like, it's kind of get the ball and go. But like, yeah, every sport, if you can get the defense out of position, you have an advantage. But I just think the bigger problem is it's like, I don't know if we're going to know until the playoffs whether or not this half court offense is better.
Yeah, and then it's all about the playoffs.
Correct. Much, and then what if that becomes just a sample size? They had two bad nights shooting. Like, I don't know. Like, that's what it all boils down to. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's come back. Let's talk a little bit more football. Let's talk a few other games that we thought were of note. Well, NFL, we'll open up the board, NFL, college, whatever we want to talk about. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, we haven't gotten into much of it because we had such a crazy weekend of college football, but it was also a pretty fascinating day of NFL football. And I think at least in the early window, we of course had our first London game. And God, it is just amazing. Every London game to me just feels like the same. It feels like you're watching, like you wake up at 8:30 and maybe it's just because you're groggy. You wake up at 8:30. Also, I did the move of I flipped the early game on. My wife's going, we're going to church. Like, I'll just go with you. Like, you know what I mean? Like it was Jets and Vikings. It was like 10-0, and I watched the Jets go 3-and-out. I was like, I'm good here. Like, if it becomes a fascinating game, there's plenty of ways to go back and rewatch it. But it feels like you're always just watching it, in a soccer stadium. It always starts to rain at some point. The game has like no energy, no juice, and you just feel like it's just kind of like a survival of who found like a way to care just a little bit more. But then we got into the early window. And I think the thing that's most interesting to me from the noon games, I don't know if the Bengals are going to get over that loss because you have a 10-point lead. Burrow has played basically perfect football. Lamar was pretty damn good too. And you escape essentially with Lamar's not ready for the snap. They snap it. You get the ball. And then you just run the ball three straight times and settle for a 58-yarder. That was the one that made no sense to me. Like, I just don't get that. Burrow was as hot as he could be. I get it. He had one turnover. And to like a certain degree, Zach Taylor's explanation was, well, at that point, we feel good with our kicker, who, by the way, has been not as automatic as he has been. Still a great kicker. He's like, we don't want to bring in a hold, take a sack, whatnot, and get out of field goal range. I think this is kind of becoming like a big frustration for me. It's like, it's almost like we have, kickers have gotten so good that we're now using them as crutches to not, like, go win the game. And instead it's like, settle for a 58-yard field goal. Well, you brought in what can happen. A slightly high snap that the holder doesn't handle. And I still have no idea how McPherson even got the kickoff. But, like, he actually got a foot on it, which was a miracle to me. But why would you not at least make some attempt to try and go win the game with your offense, which is your best unit?
You know, Jeff, as you saying that, and we haven't even talked about this today, or me and you off record, you know what happened during the Buffalo game, right?
Yes.
Except it worked the other way around.
Correct.
For the other team. It's analytics out there saying that at this stage of 40, 50 some yards is like has been hit. You know, that was a big deal like 20 years ago, a 50 yard.
No, when guys would hit a 50 yard, you're like, oh my God. Like, we stole points there.
Yeah, so now they're saying that, I don't know if you've been hearing this, that this is considered a very more common stat that's like,
it's like the highest percentage of 50 plus yarders made ever.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And so with that being said, you were talking about the analyticals. I think he ran into that because why else without, to me, you know how much I love Joe Burrow. I think he's like a top three guy that could be number one type. You know, I know I'm a little higher than some people.
No, I'm a Burrow guy.
Oh, you're Burrow? Okay, no, okay, yeah. Okay. I know it's some quarterback, someone we own and off on. So with that, I don't get why you don't at least try it. But, yeah, like you said, they're looking at kickers now as a, like, anything as a crutch like now.
And especially when you are sitting there at 1-3. And you've just been gifted a turnover. Like, what better time to be a little more aggressive? You're 1-3. Like, that one. The Buffalo one didn't bother me as much as it bothered other people. And it didn't help that, like, the broadcasters were like, what are they doing? What are they? If they would have run it three times, the Texans had all their timeouts. Mm-hmm. Like, they were still going to get the ball back and still probably have the exact same situation where they were going to have a 50-something yarder to win. The bigger problem with that game is, like, Josh was terrible.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of the worst games he's played as a pro. And, like, the receivers didn't play great, but like, that one didn't bother me. Now, this is the one that I got to get your opinion on. Where are we then with the Niners? Because on the one hand, you can say yesterday is an example of really bad luck. You have your kicker, who's been very good. He gets hurt on a kickoff play, and now you find yourself in a situation where they kick the one field goal right before the half with a punter, which, by the way, like, did you see him like just like holding his belt like right before he kicked it? That was a new style of trying to kick for me. I was like, it's like, okay, it is so funny how like you just go from punting to kicking. It's like the guy looks just so much different. But they don't have a kicker, and so they're forced, it's like a 4th-and-26 or something. They were forced to go for it. And that game gets thrown off because on a few possessions when they would have settled for a field goal, they were unable to do so and they had to keep going and they didn't score. But there is also this idea of we've had a bunch of 2-score leads and they're evaporating quite quickly. Like, how are you balancing that as a fan?
Well, it was bad luck yesterday, but I feel like, you know, just to have accountability in my team as a fan. You know, we also think we run the team more.
Yeah,
than
no, we could. We could definitely run better.
Yeah, but with me also having experience in sports and coach, I still feel like we're going to eventually get it together. But even without the kicker, I don't think we has been as dominant as I feel we should have coming into the lead. I feel like we were a top three team. If you asked on anybody rankings, I'm talking about if you ranking not even just on the NFC or AFC, just from a 30 NFL teams, I believe.
32 in the NFL.
32 in the NBA. Yeah. So I just feel like we kind of been giving games away, though, or letting them stay too close. And I know we got injuries and stuff, and I do think we still think we're a playoff team. I give us that. Unlike I think that loss did really hurt the Bengals, even though they got 17 games. I kind of think this might be the 1 year that they don't fully – I don't know, 70, they might get a while. I think we're going to make the playoffs, but I think we need to start playing consistent ball for longer stretches and putting our foot on people that's inferior, and because I do think it's becoming a problem.
Well, there's always this deal with Kyle, and I'm a card carrying member of the Kyle cult. But there's even times that I just want to yell at him, run the ball. Like, run the ball. And I know Christian's not back there, but it's like, run the ball.
Hey, and that's happened to everybody. Not to change the subject, but somebody was looking at the Jets that they were like, you got to let Aaron run. Like, at this stage of his career, he's going to be good, but y'all got to find a way to run the ball, son. If you do this, like.
They're just teeing off on him. And it's like. The Vikings defense is like the one defense I don't want to have like my quarterback being like, they know we're throwing. Because they are going to get after you.
Whether you throw it or not, they're going to blitz you.
Correct.
Like, so it's best not to just let your quarterback hang back there.
All right. And then, so tonight we've got Saints and Chiefs. I think what's interesting is, if I ask you right now, who do we think are the best teams? I mean, I think at this point it's undeniable. I think we have to include the Vikings no matter what. Like, yeah, you can. Yeah. Sam Darnold knows. Not only are they 5-0, Sam Darnold wasn't good yesterday. They still won.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so they're clearly like that team. I'm putting the Lions up there. I'm putting the Ravens up there. I'm putting.
Jeez.
I think that's the thing. It's like, so we've seen the Chiefs right now, and while they haven't been, overwhelming on offense, they're still undefeated, and I don't think they actually get enough credit. They are winning games on the backs of their defense. Mm. It's basically like, we have a very good defense, and we have Patrick Mahomes. We'll keep it close. We'll figure out a way. But, like, how many teams do you really feel confident, like, that team could win a Super Bowl?
Besides the 40 we just you named, I would add, I like the Texans.
Yeah, but then we saw yesterday, when Nico got hurt, like, that offense just started to stall. Like, it's amazing how much Nico matters. It's the same thing, like, when you talk about with Burrow, when people are like, oh, if he doesn't have Higgins and Jamar, it's like, it doesn't click. It's like, well, we saw yesterday, like, when they lost Nico, that was a big deal.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
But I'm with you. I think like the Texans are definitely.
And then I like also the Commanders and the Eagles.
So, I want to see Philly healthy. Because right now, this was my other big takeaway. The best team in the NFC East, and like, I've watched every game they've played, and I've watched the NFC East as closely as I watch any division. The best team's the Commanders. And they're doing it really with no defense. But I mean, Daniels is, like, that is also the other thing, like, you just realize about sports. Sometimes it's simply just as simple. Go get a quarterback.
No. That's all. And I know we try to, listen, I'm a coach, and I love how much we do with coaches. But in game, and coach is going to get mad at me for saying this, in game and coaching is a little overrated. So it matters about practice, but what you also got to have in basketball, football, anywhere, you got to have a dude. And, yes. And it's like, I don't think the coach now is better than Ron Rivera. I hate Ron Rivera big for 10. He was saying, the difference between me and the other guys, I'm not throwing him under the bus. I don't have a consistent quarterback. And I know he got to be watching games now, like, dude, if I had Jaden, you know what I'm
Raheem
saying?
Raheem Morris basically says, like, listen, if the Falcons would have had a quarterback last year, I don't have this job.
Yeah.
And now he's got a guy that's playing well. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we tell your story. We'll get out of here. Stick around. You're listening to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Herd, for today's Tell Your Story, I referenced it during our segment with Munns, but for my Tell Your Story, I'm going with Zach McKinstry, third baseman for the Detroit Tigers. When asked how they lost the game on his first inning error, they watered the field when we came in to take ground balls. They didn't water it for the game. It just took a weird hop off the dirt, the first kick. You hoped to make that play, but didn't, and you end up losing the game because of it. An error in the first inning because they didn't water the field. That was all she wrote. That's quite. Don't tell these story. Tell your story. Right now, the Tigers and the Guardians locked up at zero. I think that's the third inning. So appreciate that. Also appreciate Munns for joining the program. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast show after the program ends. For Dennis, for Herd, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.